Hello and welcome to another special Bruins podcast here at HalPhillips.net. Unless you've been living under a rock the last few days, you know that Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals was, shall we say, eventful. The Bruins' Nathan Horton knocked cold by Canucks defenseman Aaron Rome, who was then sent off and subsequently suspended four games, effectively ending his season. The Bruins went on to smoke Vancouver 8-1, effectively erasing the effects of two heart-rending losses in games 1 and 2. I honestly didn't think it was possible for the Bruins to put behind them the surrendering of a game-winner with 18 seconds left in game 1, and a game-winner just 11 seconds into overtime in game 2. But game 3, for all its queasy, uncomfortable overtones, was just such a series changer. We talk about the hit, the suspension, and the ramifications in store for tonight's game 4 with David Smith.
Hey, Hal.
Are you prepared to, like, assume commissionership if you have to clean up the NHL?
Definitely.
Oh, good.
Definitely. Although, you know, there are signs things may be heading in a better direction.
What do you mean?
Well, as much as I think the Rome's suspension was inconsistent with the league's disciplinary actions to date, I do think it's a move in the right direction.
Well, that's fair enough. I think that a lot of people, I've heard and read a lot of complaining about the fact that they, I heard it from you and I heard it from two other people, neither of whom are Canadian fans, that used the Chara hit on Pacioretty during the latter stages of the regular season as an example of something that should have been at least this. And you can't create any kind of consistency if you aren't consistent.
Right. No, I think that's the point. And, you know, fans all over the place, if they're paying attention, whether it's their team or some other team, ought to be up in arms about this. And the fact that in the Stanley Cup Finals on a hit that was, clearly a penalty, but at least it was a clean check, not a flagrant high stick, not a flagrant slash, not a hit from behind into the boards. Wasn't one of the nastier kinds of offenses, that the league did step up and say, even under those circumstances, given what happened to this guy as a result of the infraction, we're going to give him a four-game suspension. And my understanding is that Mike Murphy, who has taken over as the disciplinary chief, because Colin Campbell has to recuse himself, given his son's presence on the Bruins, that Murphy actually consulted with Brendan Shanahan about this. Brendan will take over for Campbell next year in that slot. So if Shanahan had some input into this and was one of the people who convinced them, we need to draw a line in the sand and not wait till next year but start it now, then, that could be a good thing for hockey and for NHL players.
Maybe people have sort of forgotten about him, but Sidney Crosby didn't play how many, the last month of the season or even longer?
Yeah, he was the league's leading scorer when he went out. He was out for since the middle of January. So for a good part of the season, attempted a bit of a comeback as far as practicing is concerned. Had to curtail that when severe headaches started again. And there's some real question about whether he's ever going to play NHL hockey again.
Mark Savard is suffering from the same sort of concussion as a result of a hit, whether it was dirty or had, requisite menace, who knows, but it's the same kind of dynamic.
No, it's good. The couple of checks, both the checks that gave Savard concussion issues over the years were both hits from behind into the boards. They were both dirty hits.
Yeah.
Don't forget, Patrice Bergeron was out for a full season, recovering from a concussion as well. So it is a serious problem in the league, as they look at, studying the brains of athletes who have died, that have either been boxers, football players, hockey players. They're seeing things in there that are not normal. And, the league, the players, everybody needs to pay a lot more attention to that, if they value the sport and like the speed and skill of the sport, hitting is always going to be part of it. But You know, you've got to take the dirty hits out of it, and the only way you're going to get it through the, you know, the thick skulls of some hockey players like, you know, like Matt Cook of Pittsburgh, who's been a perennial offender, is through long suspensions. You know, if they're not playing hockey and they're not getting paid, you know, that's in the end what those guys are going to ultimately respond to.
You won't have like the Eddie Shore Veterans Committee funding those guys under the table if you send them out without being paid.
I don't think in general those guys made enough money to fund those kind of efforts, but I could be wrong.
No, probably not. Let's talk about that, though. I mean, the hit really was just microseconds away from being perfectly legitimate in my mind, and I'm a Bruins fan, so it's not easy for me to say that. It was horrible to watch. I mean, lying prone on the ice with his arm outstretched, it was really eerie. But that did he even leave his feet? It was a fraction late. It wasn't a blind, you know, boarding incident with a stick. It was very close to being legitimate.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that hit in real time, you know, but you know, it was clearly within, you know, 2 seconds. Some people say 1 second of him having gotten rid of the puck, but 1 second can be a long time in hockey. And you know, the bottom line is, and I think this is why the NHL ruled the way that it did, is that he had gotten rid of the puck and he was not looking in the direction of the player that hit him. You know, did he leave his feet? You know, I didn't see that. I saw him definitely make a, you know, movement toward Horton, you know, with his upper body, you know, much the same way, by the way, that Tim Thomas, you know, leapt out of his crease to take down one of the Sedin boys later in the game. You know, no concussion there, but it was definitely interference, and it was definitely, you know, jumping off his feet to make an upper body hit.
Yeah, but wait. Goalies are given all sorts of license in any number of ways.
Sure they are, and there was no injury and all of that. So, you know, when you've got a player who doesn't have the puck, who's looking a different direction, you know, there should be the onus should be on the player who's going to deliver that check to make it, you know, a clean hit. You know, if the guy doesn't have the puck, he shouldn't be hitting him at all. That's interference. That's in the rules. Blow the whistle whether he's hurt or not. That is a penalty.
Right.
The fact that he did get hurt and that the player making the check, you know, it's his responsibility to know that guy's not even looking in my direction. He doesn't have the puck. I can't make that check. So, you know, in this case, Rome made the wrong decision, you know, didn't pull up in time, followed through on the check and, you know, and got in the end what he deserved, in theory. You know, again, you have to take it in its sort of relative context of, you know, 4 games in the Stanley Cup Finals, the last 4 games of the Stanley Cup Finals. Was the offense that egregious when compared to others that have had similar effects that led to either no suspension or a shorter suspension or 4 games but not 4 Stanley Cup Final games? You know, those are legitimate questions that fans can ask, but you know, like I said, if this is the NHL putting its foot down and they're going to be consistent in this way from now on, that's fine. However, you can't, you know, you also have to look at the other side of it, and the fans who are up in arms about this suspension, you know, also have some reason to be. You know, Chara's hit on Pacioretty is only one example. You know, exact same call. You know, 5-minute major for interference and a game misconduct, a player in this case with a concussion and a broken neck, different situations because one's along the boards and a stanchion happens to get in the way either, you know, accidentally or not. But same exact infraction, same exact punishment, but no suspension. On top of that, a lot of fans look at the fact that, you know, even though Colin Campbell recuses himself from these issues, you know, his son does play for the team, and the guy reporting to him is making these calls. And on top of that, you've got Jeremy Jacobs, who is the chairman of the executive committee of the NHL, who is the owner of the Boston Bruins.
The temptation is to fixate on the hit. It's really more interesting to think about how this event changed Game 3 and changes the series, because it totally does. It changed the game, I think, in a way that we all recognized. But now an already thin defensive core for the Canucks is that much thinner. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, they won first two games of the series by just wearing the Bruins down over three periods. And they're not going to be able to do that on the defensive end with only five guys.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, I think the series changed, honestly, the minute both teams took the ice in Boston Garden. You know, Boston, A, plays a different game when they're at home. They're much more physical. The fans really do make a difference in terms of this club. You know, the tenor of the series had changed before this hit even happened. Boston came up flying. They were hitting. They were getting good shots.
Wait a minute. No. I don't go along with that. The first 5 minutes of that game, the Canucks were all over the Bruins. They could
the first couple of minutes they were, but after that it changed pretty quickly. I mean, if you look at the shots on goal, you know, in that period because of
the 5 minute major
by Vancouver, despite the 5 minute major, you know, Vancouver did have more shots on goal.
Right.
But you know, but Boston was playing with a different temperament, I thought. But you're right. Now that they're down to, you know, arguably four defensemen. I mean, Bieksa, Edler, Ehrhoff, and Salo, you know, were all over 22 minutes apiece. Ehrhoff was almost 28 minutes himself on the ice. It's pretty clear that, you know, they're going to go with four defensemen, and over a seven-game series, that's going to hurt you. You know, meanwhile, on the Boston side, you know, only Chara and Seidenberg were over 20 minutes.
Right.
So, you know, Julian has been able to, you know, keep rolling his defensemen, and you know, seemingly successfully. I mean, Vancouver was 0-for-8 on the power play in the game. That does not bode well for those guys at all, because that's their bread and butter. But if Boston can, you know, as you said, keep wearing down those four defensemen that they have, Vancouver's going to be in a whole lot of trouble.
I guess I don't really go along with what you're saying about how the series changed when it came to Boston, because I thought that the Bruins were successful in playing a Boston-type game in Vancouver in games one and two. They were unfortunate to lose both of them. I'm not saying they should have won, but they were in both games, and you know, they were both low-scoring games, and they were, you know, clutch-and-grab games to a certain extent. So they were able to impose their will on the series from the beginning, don't you think?
Yeah, well, they were in those games for sure, but they weren't playing, you know, what I would characterize as Boston Bruins hockey. They were playing carefully. They were playing smartly. They were, you know, when they got the 2-1 lead in game two, they were trapping successfully. And those are, you know, those are important aspects of Boston's game that Julian has brought to that team. But in terms of intimidating the other team the way they do so well on Boston Garden ice, that really wasn't happening in those first two games. And part of it is the crowd, and part of it is the fact that, you know, Vancouver you know, had Hamhouse in game one, and, you know, Luongo looked good in game one, but it all started to unravel pretty quickly when they got to Boston. And Boston's a team that when they get going, when they start playing with confidence and they got the fans behind them and they're hitting and there's an edge to the play, you know, I hate to say it, but in some ways, you know, what happened to Horton may end up being, if they do go on to win the series, one of the most important factors in that win. You know, it certainly charged up the team. They came back like a house on fire. And to you know, while you hate to lose a player of Horton's caliber, knocking a defenseman out of the picture for Vancouver when they're already missing their number one guy, you know, means a lot. If you can sub in, you know, Tyler Seguin for Horton, you know, it's a rookie for a veteran, but Seguin is no slouch. He's proven it. Played real well in the Philadelphia series. So, you know, in the end, it'll be interesting to see if the Boston style of play continues to be that way. I expect it to be tonight. I expect them to come out again like a house on fire and be throwing bodies everywhere and driving the net. And, you know, if they can keep putting that kind of pressure on Vancouver's defense and on Luongo, you know, they're going to give the Canucks all they can handle.
It is interesting that you know the Bruins are sort of goal scoring challenged, and losing Horton, who had scored so many big goals, should be a devastating thing for them. But Peverley played great on the first line in his place, and you know the it's a luxury to bring a guy like Seguin off the bench. He's not the same kind of player, but you know he instantly makes that fourth line a different line.
He does, and as does the changes to the Vancouver defense. I mean, if you look at who was shooting the puck in the last game for the Bruins, you know, you had Bergeron with 6 shots on goal. Recky had a bunch. Michael Ryder had a bunch. They were getting some good shots from their defensemen. Seidenberg, I think, and Chara had 2 or 3 apiece. Krejci had 4. Paille, with 3.
Paille was great.
You know, and you look at the kinds of goals that were scored, too. I mean, 2 shorthanded goals, including that, beautiful goal scored by Marchand, although you got to ask what Luongo was thinking. But, he came in and just burned, I forget who the defenseman was, that he went right around. But,
Kessler. It was Kessler caught up at the point.
Right. So, but, I think it shows that, Vancouver, minus the stout defense that they've had to get them to that President's Trophy this year, is not the same team.
The Canucks scored more goals than any team in the league this year. They also gave up more goals than any team in the league this year. Their goal differential was also the best. So,
right.
it's not a team that beats you by shutting you down. They outscore
right.
you. And in the first 2 games of the series, it was really interesting. They really tried to stand up the Bruins forwards. They had no respect for the Bruins' speed. They were trying to stand them up at the blue line. They didn't feel like they could get beaten, with their skate speed. And again, I just keep coming back to it. They just can't afford to play that boldly with only 4 guys.
It's going to be tough. The onus is really going to be on Vancouver's forwards now, to play a 2-way game. And, the trade-off with that is you can't be as offensively minded as you would like, and you can't really have your defensemen, pitching in and getting into the play the way Vancouver likes to have them get into the play.
You can't forecheck aggressively as they like.
You really can't. I mean, those guys are going to need help, and, ultimately, who knows? That may end up being a benefit to Vancouver. As you alluded to, all those goals against they had during the regular season is indicative of their, wide-open style of play. They like to play end-to-end hockey. They like to play fast, and that means they will give up on odd man rushes and get burned from time to time, but they're also going to pot more than their share of goals too. If the situation they're in now dictates to them that they have to be a bit more careful defensively and just sort of bide their time and be opportunistic, that may not be a bad thing.
Really, the third period in Game 3, it was so beyond testy, I can't even say. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a period with that much open hostility being expressed. How much of that do we see in this game?
I think you're going to see less of that than people would expect. All these players know that there's too much at stake for that to happen. They know that the referees are going to be, as eagle-eyed as they can be, particularly at the start of this game. They're going to be looking for cheap shots and retaliation and that kind of thing. If these players are smart, they won't go that route, and I don't think they will. I don't think coaches want that kind of thing to continue. It really ultimately doesn't benefit anybody. I do think Boston will come out, playing the body, and I do think they're going to be focusing a lot on dump and chase. Get the puck behind a Vancouver defenseman and forecheck hard and wear those guys out. And just create shots. A key sort of question here is, how is Luongo going to react to not having the phalanx of strong defensemen in front of him that he's had? He failed that test miserably in Game 3. He wasn't there to make the big saves that they needed him to make. Unless he starts coming up big and filling some of those holes that they have in their defense now, the series could tilt in Boston's favor in a big way.
I think it already has tilted in Boston's favor in a big way. We have to see all of this manifest tonight, because I think that they're in Vancouver's head. I think Luongo, they finally proven to themselves, the Bruins have, that they can beat this guy more than once or twice a game. They're thin now in the back, really thin. Are they really going to try and play 4? Don't they have a 5th guy they can bring up?
No, they've got 6 defensemen dressed,
yeah.
But they're really relying on those 4 guys. I mean, you know, Albert's played, you know, 15, 16 minutes on defense for them. You know, Rome got in, a minute and a half, something like that. So, you know, they'll dress another defenseman. But, you know, the other thing about tonight's game is, let's not forget, not only are you in Boston with the Boston crowd and the Bruins being on their home ice, but, you know, Julian has the last line change. And I do think that made a difference in game three. You know, he was matching lines, you know, playing the Bergeron line against the Sedins, shutting those guys down. And it's interesting to see, you know, that Bergeron had those six shots on goal, even though he was being asked to play, you know, a defensive system. You know, Julian, because of that, can roll, not roll four lines, but put all four of his lines into use at strategic points that make sense, give guys a bit of a rest. So, you know, home ice makes a difference. And I think anybody, you know, anybody who is objective about this series, you know, expected it to go six or seven games, and we could easily go back to Vancouver tied, you know, based on, you know, the home ice factors. Doesn't mean that, you know, that necessarily that the Bruins have, you know, a ton of momentum, but considering all these other aspects of it that we've discussed, it certainly gives them a big leg up.
Well, it takes 2 points to create a line. You know, they can't get the momentum unless they win tonight.
That's true.
So we talked a week ago, and you were talking about, you know, Vancouver in six or seven. Are you going to stick with that?
Boston's a bit streaky. Overall skill level, Vancouver is still a more skilled team. You know, can they respond to these challenges they have? Yeah, I think so. But I'm more expecting a seven-game series right now than a six-game series.
Well, you know what they say in a seven-game series, that the most important game is the next one. That's this one tonight.
Right. Oh, can't wait.
I know. I'm pumped up. All right, David, thanks for the knowledge.
You bet, Hal. Good talking with you.
Likewise. Later.